This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at LinkedIn.com/decide. That's LinkedIn.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
We are back after a vacation. We finally did it, Ryan.
Yes, we finally had a week-long vacation, which was absolutely nice. But I'm not going to lie to you. I did miss being here talking to our listeners and actually being present. There was so much that has happened during our time.
Oh, my God. Totally. There was so much. I was trying not to look at my phone too much because you do want to disconnect. We all deserve that.
Right.
But, of course, we are in this business and we report about the news. So it's hard to kind of step back when the world feels like it's falling apart.
Well, the funny thing is, I think the one thing that was keeping me busy was just finally catching up on things that I was procrastinating on or I hadn't had the time to do. So that it wasn't like I was out in, you know, at in Hawaii or something, like lounging by a body of water. Now, you on the other
hand, the Mai Tai.
You were all up and down the wild forest chilling with animals.
I did go on a road trip along the California coast, which a lot of people were worried because there are a lot of fires happening. We avoided those. We were very safe.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's kind of crazy. Like California, between the heat wave and these fires, it makes you question living here.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. But all the videos and photos and stuff that you posted, and I know there's more coming.
Yes, it's very beautiful. Let me tell you, I went to some amazing places. Go to my Instagram at Shira Lazar. You'll be blown away. Very inspired to travel. That's all I'm saying. But yes, a lot of news happening. Let's just dive in.
Yeah, we got a lot to cover. I mean, in the headlines and in the tea report, honey. So let's do it.
Okay. Now, after days of protests against the Rochester Police Department in light of the death of Daniel Prude, its top officer, LaRon Singletary, and command staff announced today they are retiring from the force. And Mayor Lovely Warren shared this at a news conference.
I am confirming that Chief LaRon Singletary today announced his retirement along with Commando Morbido. I want to thank Chief Singletary and Commander Morbido for their service, and we appreciate them. I want to assure our Rochester community that the Rochester Police Department will continue to serve and protect our residents and our neighborhoods. Chief Singletary will remain in charge of the department through the end of the month, and I know that he and the officers will fulfill their duties.
Now, this also was big. It happened while we were gone. You know, it's wild to report about this now and catch up on everything. A new interim police chief was named in Louisville, Kentucky, yesterday amid months of unrest in the city. The new interim chief, Yvette Gentry, is a former member of the Louisville Police Department who brings the strong community relationships needed to lead until a permanent chief is named. And that comes from Mayor Greg Fisher. Gentry is Black and has served 20-something years, and she says she's willing to die for a city that wouldn't even make my son feel welcome. Louisville has endured months of chaos following the March death of Breonna Taylor, who was shot dead by police while in her Louisville home. No officers have been charged in connection to her death.
Now let's talk about, that is some, I mean, powerful words, you know? I served 20-something years willing to die for a city that wouldn't even make my son feel comfortable or welcome, she said. That is, I mean, I don't think I would have said
powerful.
It, I mean, any other way. You couldn't have said it better. But I do feel like we're doing a lot of police-related news in this top of the hour.
Well, there are a lot of changes. I think that finally we're seeing, like, the protests, they're realizing these cities that they need to show some sort of shift or else this will continue.
I agree.
The thing is, the question is, having individuals from the Black community who are leaders, will that help? Do you think that a lot of the civil unrest will end up stopping?
I think the one thing that I always quote, her name is Angela Rice. She's a political correspondent. You've seen her probably all over CNN. But she says, not all skin folk is kin folk. And what that means is just because we are the same kin color does not mean they represent the same values that we all stand up for. So only time will tell.
Now, let's move on to the Philippines. The President Rodrigo Duterte pardoned a U.S. Marine on Monday in a surprise move that will free him from imprisonment in the 2014 killing of a transgender Filipino woman that sparked anger across their country. A left-wing human rights group, Karapatan, immediately condemned the pardon as a despicable and shameless mockery of justice and stability to U.S. imperialist interests. That's happening in the Philippines. Okay, that was what's trending this hour. And we're moving into top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. We got some good stuff for you.
Yes, we do. And we call this the Tea Report, those pop culture moments that are trending right now. Now, breaking news, Kim Kardashian just announced the end of an era. There will be no more Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Now, in a statement posted on Twitter, she said this: after what will be 14 years, 20 seasons, hundreds of episodes, and several spinoff shows, we've decided as a family to end this very special journey. Our last season will air early next year in 2021. We love you. Now, the full statement is, like I said, posted all over social media. So if you want to check that out, that was just a little snippet. But what I will find interesting here, Shira, how will this family remain relevant? Because this show is really all they have. And I mean, you got to give it to them, y'all. Out of all of this time, 14 years to build an empire in the way that they've all built one is impressive.
It's a long time. It's still not a long time considering. Yeah, they were definitely not where they're at. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how E! The network survives, because this was a huge part of the network. And we all know they had a lot of firing. So maybe that's why also they're ending it. I don't think E! Has the money to continue it.
I mean,
they would have had to give the network over to the Kardashians.
Now let's move on to some other news, because of course we weren't actually in studio when this happened. Mm-hmm. It happened the night we were actually going into vacation. But Chadwick Boseman, who played Black Icons Jackie Robinson, James Brown, and Black Panther, of course, he died from colon cancer on August 28th. Now Lupita Nyong'o, she issued an emotional statement about Chadwick Boseman's death just days after she and her fellow Black Panther stars attended his memorial, which was very small and private. Here's some of the little bit of how she would describe of his work ethic. She said, "I think he understood the power of words and chose to manifest power through his words. He used his mouth to build, to edify, and never to break, and he used it to tell some regrettably lame dad jokes." Now, her statement actually really kind of brought me to tears this morning, just because I just was wondering how she was dealing with everything. Head over to her IG to read the full statement. And of course, that is your Tea Report of all the pop culture moments trending right now.
Really sad. So unfortunate. Now coming up, Trump's latest attacks on the military, closed door comments that have come out, and how that might impact how veterans decide to vote. That's next in 10 minutes. President Trump's thoughts on the military, well, they've always been around, but more have recently come out, and it doesn't look good. Multiple news organizations, including the Washington Post, have confirmed private comments he made saying those who served are, quote, suckers and losers. Plus, he allegedly told the wife of a slain serviceman that her husband knew what he signed up for. So that's pretty compassionate, isn't it? How is this going to impact how veterans view him and vote in the election? Well, back with us is Natalie Jennings, editor of The Fix for The Washington Post. Welcome back.
Hey, guys.
Why would Trump attack the military?
Let's start there.
We don't think he didn't say this publicly. He's alleged to have said it on a foreign trip to France around when he was scheduled to go and visit a cemetery. And he questioned, allegedly, according to people who were there, why he would go visit people who, you know, these were the losers. These are people who didn't win. And it rings familiar for people who followed what he said publicly about John McCain and his being captured. So, you know, there's precedent for Trump having said similar publicly, and he is denying that he said this. He's saying, you know, this is all a hoax and he didn't really say this. There's a lot of sources out there saying that he did.
Well, here's the thing, though. According to the CCES study of verified 2016 voters, Trump won veterans and active military members by a 27-point margin. Now, if he loses this support, how damaging could this be for him during the remainder of this time of, you know, the 2020 election cycle?
obviously that would be very damaging. I do think this one thing I will say about these allegations is that the people who are making the allegations are anonymous. There's lots of people on the record saying, oh, no, he never said that. And those are the people putting a name to their statements. There's lots of reasons for that, reasons why military doesn't want to speak out against President Trump and get involved in politics.
But they're also not doing enough, in my opinion, to say that he didn't say it, right? And I think he also feels that way.
Some people are very conspicuously saying that he didn't. But here's the thing. A lot of people who are inclined to support President Trump already think that a lot of what is said in media reports about him is, you know, hard to believe, and absent, you know, someone coming forward and putting a name on those claims, it's hard to know if that will really sway anyone. I think the people that it's more likely to sway are in some groups that are not necessarily those military folks, people like, you know, suburban voters who are already wavering. People are kind of in his corner can cast this aside as it stands now.
Yeah, but it's, again, we're talking to Nallie Jennings, editor of The Fix for The Washington Post. And what I was about to get into is the fact that this shouldn't be surprising considering his family background. Like, supposedly, if people know that history, they would make fun of people going into the military versus going into the family business. And then even his past criticism of John McCain, that's very public. And like people know about that. And actually a reporter did ask him about what we've been talking about and his past criticism of McCain. And here's what he had to say.
No, I don't understand it at all. No, because I've always been on the opposite side of John McCain. John McCain liked wars. I will be a better warrior than anybody. But when we fight a war, we're going to win them. And frankly, I was never a fan of John McCain. You know that. It's been very obvious.
So with that said, that's not just the news media picking up on this, making their headline or their story. You're hearing it from him. Does that influence anything?
I think it makes it, you know, this is a recognizable pattern, I will say. It's not hard to imagine him saying what he's accused of saying based on, you know, knowing what we know. And he also said similar things. He kind of denigrated the service of George H.W. Bush. He's been known to be indelicate at best around things. And so, yeah, it's kind of not sure that it changes anyone's mind, but people are certainly seeing this as a new low.
Well, one major talking point that Trump and his surrogates say often is that he's trying to bring troops back home. But I thought wasn't it reported that he actually increased the amount of troops there? Is that true?
I think we're a bit over troop levels when he came in office, and they've moved around some. He has made some moves designed to getting troop levels down in places like Germany, which is like sort of a preventative military presence that we have there. Mm-hmm. And he has announced cuts coming to that. You know, we know he is doing this. We know that his election is right around the corner, and this is a key campaign promise. So he's doing some things that he can say will affect that. And this continues to be a line that he says, you know, he's fighting to bring these folks home, even though troop levels are not down substantially, if at all.
Yeah. So is he, I guess, pro-war, anti-war? He says he just wants to win a war. Is he pro-military, anti-military? I'm just confused about his take on it.
I think he has, you could say he's consistently been anti-war and wanting to bring people home, and still has a lot of support from people who are libertarian. You know, once you get into office, we see this a lot with presidents. They make these pledges and then you get into office and see the realities. And, you know, it's complicated. It's really complicated bringing troops home, say, from Syria. As we saw earlier this year, is that still this year? Gosh, it's been a long year. You know, that was a major controversy because that required deserting our allies. Sounds, you know, right to not want to keep people's lives at risk for, you know, something that doesn't directly affect a ton of Americans, but actually doing that and the consequence of it, you know, is tough.
Okay, well, Nallie is sticking around with us because coming up, it's been only 2 months since U.S. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy took his job, and he's been experiencing, as we know, a ton of scandal. But now his past is coming back to haunt him. Details on the latest accusations in 7 minutes. The House Oversight Committee is launching an investigation into U.S. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy following reports that he reimbursed employees for donating to GOP candidates. New York Representative Carolyn Maloney, who's the chairwoman of the committee, said in a statement to CNN today that if the allegations are true, the Postmaster General could face criminal exposure, not only for his actions in North Carolina, which is, by the way, where the company he ran, where he did this, was at, but also for lying to our committee under oath. And back with us to dive into this story, is Natalie Jennings, editor of The Fix for The Washington Post. Thanks for being back.
Yeah.
So where are these accusations against DeJoy coming from and why now?
They are coming. Well, why is because reporters dug into this. There was, good reporting that went into it. And I can say that.
That's some good journalism.
Lots of tips like this fly in, and I'm very proud that we were able to get somewhat to the bottom of it. So It's coming from former employees of DeJoy's company. He was a successful CEO. His company was sold in like the mid-teens. Before that, he was the owner of a big logistics company in North Carolina, where five employees say that they were encouraged to donate to Republican causes, candidates, campaigns, organizations. And two of those employees have told us that there was a structure put in place where DeJoy would find a way to give bonuses to those employees to defray the costs that they were paying to donate to these causes. That is highly illegal behavior. It's kind of campaign law 101 that you can't hide what you're doing like this. It's called a straw donor scheme. So that's very serious, although this happened at least 5 years ago, which is a federal statute of limitations for criminal behavior.
Well, my thing is there's already this huge conflict of interest because of his work, DeJoy's work, in either being a huge supporter of Trump and then obviously a fundraiser to the Republican Party. What are we going to see now that this whole entire scandal with the mail-in ballots situation happening and the USPS situation happening, how does that all kind of come together? What should people be looking for?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, DeJoy has been in hot water, especially over, he's only been in this job for 2 months and it has been full of drama. Yep. This is something that precedes that. This is yet another person tied to Trump who has been accused of criminal activity, even though he might not face criminal consequences because of the timing. This casts doubt on the person who is in charge of the organization that is going to conduct our elections in large part. And it just shows, there's nothing direct that we can say about what he is doing now and how that is affiliated. I mean, I think he's in this position because he was such a prolific fundraiser. Now we see how. It just shows that he has been willing to cross legal lines in the past. And that is troubling, given, the role that he's going to play in the next democracy.
It doesn't help with us having trust in him, that is for sure. And again, we're talking to Natalie Jennings, the editor of The Fix for The Washington Post, as we talk about these allegations against DeJoy, who is the Postmaster General for the USPS. Now, here's Trump's response, actually, at a press conference yesterday.
Parties. I don't know exactly what the story is. I'll certainly know within a short period of time. I just read it for the first time. I read it this morning, just like you did.
Would you support an investigation, sir?
Sure.
I think let
the investigations go, but he's a very respected man. Again, it was a bipartisan commission. Postmaster General is appointed by a bipartisan commission, and we'll see how that goes. But no, I think he's a very honest guy, but we'll...
So what did you think about this response, Natalie?
Not exactly a ringing defense of someone who is in his political corner, which is something that we, President Trump demands a lot of loyalty, doesn't always give it in return, but he is someone who likes to defend his allies and people who he thinks are in his corner and going to be helpful and supportive for him. This is a signal that maybe he doesn't really care so much about DeJoy's fate. Maybe he thinks it's more trouble than it's worth. He's not one to be steeped in the details, as you could hear there, but it's really notable that he did not come out defending DeJoy, I thought.
I wasn't even shocked, to be honest, because I think DeJoy is just another puzzle piece, right? And I think he got what he needed from him. That was the fundraising money and all that stuff. And he got the support that I think he's done. But I do want to go back to one thing that we kind of skipped over. You said that DeJoy may not have any type of criminal repercussions for this. Like, what does that really mean? Because if this is a crime, why is he not about to go to jail?
So just federal. So the federal statute of limitations for criminal activity in this case is 5 years. Now, he still might have violated some campaign finance laws in North Carolina. We haven't heard whether the district attorney there will investigate, but that's a potential source of trouble. This could increase political pressure on him. And there's also, as you said, that congressional committee that's investigating. So that wasn't to say that he is not going to face any consequences. It's just unclear what those will be. And it's unlikely, based on what we know now, that federal prison would be one of them. People have gone to jail for this crime, but it's unlikely for him because of the timing.
I think there's a joke about him getting mail in prison here, but I don't know. All right. Well, Natalie Jennings, thanks again for joining us for this. We appreciate it.
Glad to.
Again, that was Natalie Jennings, editor of The Fix for The Washington Post. Now coming up, the inventor of gender reveal parties is speaking out against them after a devastating fire in San Bernardino County. What she had to say next in 10 minutes. More than 20,000 Californians have been evacuated from their homes as firefighters continue to struggle to control a fire in San Bernardino County. And that was all started by a smoke-generating pyrotechnic device used in a gender reveal stunt.
I mean, okay. I just want to know, are the straights okay? Are the heterosexuals okay? Because I feel like these gender reveal parties just keep getting bigger and bigger and more dangerous as time goes on.
It's getting out of hand. Like, one, the big question, do we even need a gender reveal party? Isn't that kind of
It's binary? It's so problematic. Yeah, exactly. It really is. It's really weird, especially, have you seen those gender reveal videos where the wife wants a girl, and then as soon as it's like pink balloons or whatever pink comes out, and then the dad or the boyfriend just looks disappointed AF? Like, it is just awful to know, like, this is what the standards are when it comes to heterosexual activities. I don't get it.
Yes. So that could be a whole other conversation, the relevance of these things. But if you're going to do one, okay, like, why would you do this during a time when California is on fire? Like, does that even make sense?
Yeah.
Why would you do that? Why in your right mind would you do something that could possibly create a fire?
I mean, it's so crazy because I think for me, coming from the South, this is not something that I would have ever imagined that I would have to worry about, right? This idea of like forest fires or things like that. Like, coming from the South, we were worried about tornadoes and just, you know, the rainfall from hurricanes and all that stuff and like floods and little things like that. But like, these fires are scary. To see neighborhoods, half the like counties being burnt down because of one little mistake feels like, oh, wow, are they about to go to jail?
I would think so.
Oh,
I mean, this is an offense. Yeah, criminal charges. You know, because if you start a fire, then it is illegal, right? Yeah. Whatever you're told to do anything that could possibly start a fire. And let alone, I don't even think fireworks are legal, right?
I don't think they are either, because I remember the 4th of July, that was like the big news story here in Los Angeles, and saying like, oh, no matter what, people are going to do it. And they had the sky cams showing all the fireworks across the county. And yeah, it's not legal here. I don't understand why people think that this is safe or it should be done.
Oh, you know what's sad? We can't control natural disasters. We can try to, of course, we know, with climate change and all that. But you would think we can control human stupidity, but it seems like we can't. So this person that I guess is the creator of gender reveal parties, like, I don't even know what that means that you created them. She basically did it for herself and then
the first
inspired
one.
Everyone.
Yeah.
So she is the creator, okay? She said on Facebook, stop having these stupid parties for the love of God. Stop burning things down and tell everyone about your kid's penis. No one cares but you. She goes, it was 116 degrees in Pasadena yesterday, and this tool thought it would be smart to light up a fire about his kid's D word. Toxic masculinity is men thinking they need to explode something because simply enjoying a baby party is for sissies.
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. I wish she wouldn't have used that S word, because I mean, it's really not relevant here, but I understand the frustration. We were in the middle of a heat wave this past weekend. It is ridiculous that someone thought, oh, in the hottest of days in California, we are going to set all of this stuff on fire. It makes no sense to me. It doesn't. It's wild.
Yes. So who knows? Maybe she'll have to have her baby in prison after all this. It's kind of awkward to know that you were inadvertently part of this. Like, as a baby, imagine you grow up and you're like, I'm sorry. This was not on me. My parents didn't know what they were doing. And that's that.
I just think gender reveals are weird altogether. They're stupid.
Well, hopefully this will officially put it to an end. We need to move on with our lives. Thank you very much. Okay, coming up, a new campaign video featuring Kamala Harris and President Obama swapping stories about Joe Biden was just released today. Is the hype enough, though, to get previous Obama supporters on the Biden-Harris train? We go there next. We are back bringing you more show and news that you need to know. Of course, coming up this hour, Dr. Anthony Fauci thinks we're heading towards a pandemic era. What does that mean? Yeah. It kind of scares me.
It feels very scary. Like there's just no happiness at the end of the tunnel. But to be honest, that ship has sailed now that we've been 6 months into this quarantine thing.
Yeah. So what does that mean? Stay tuned for that. And how to sort through all the coronavirus information, even if it's 100% true. It might be misleading. We're getting into that with our favorite Brian Dunning from the Skeptoid podcast. But let's get into some what's trending this hour. A new campaign video featuring former President Obama talking with Kamala Harris about his relationship with Joe Biden has popped up. I love both of these people. And it's the first time Obama has appeared virtually alongside Harris since she was named Biden's vice presidential pick. Here it is.
Tell me about Joe and your relationship with Joe and what do I need to know? Like, what's the thing about the ice cream? He loves ice cream. You know, tell me about that.
Ice cream is big. Pasta with red sauce. He can go deep on that. He really does like those aviator glasses. He knows he looks good in them. But look, the main thing to know about Joe is that Joe has never lost his sense of why we do this.
So many things about this. One, I love how Obama is just leaning back, so chill, so cool with his coffee. Makes me want a cup right now. Kamala, okay. How does she work out every single day? I have no idea.
Well, are you a body language expert all of a sudden? Who knew? She took like 4 days off and she's now able to read the room. No, I think one thing that I love about this is that Kamala Harris was always compared to Barack Obama and compared to about the way she spoke, the way she handled herself. And it's so nice to see them interacting in a way and seeing her kind of take this new official role and him really just giving advice. And this fun, cute little conversation about Joe Biden was something that I loved.
Obama could give anyone advice, I think. He's like that sage, cool dude that you want to get advice from.
Sure,
that's
he's married. He is married.
I didn't say, I said advice, the wise uncle.
I don't know. It's just every time you talk about him, it's like you're in love with the man.
I mean, I would want to find myself an Obama.
Goodness.
But that's it.
Inappropriate.
Now let's talk about TikTok. They're working to remove videos of a man apparently taking his own life, and they're banning users that keep trying to spread the clips on the platform. It's the latest example of this ongoing struggle by big tech companies to police their platforms for harmful content amid increasing pressure from regulators. And I would say their users and parents. The video was originally live streamed on Facebook before being circulated on other social media sites, including TikTok. Well, that's an app, of course. And now they're trying to figure it out, but it's really sad. We've seen this before. I'm surprised that TikTok is obviously doing something about it, but Facebook isn't taking it down yet.
Yeah, I don't understand why a lot of these companies don't have plans for this. I feel like we are in the year 2020. There should be plans for stuff like this, unfortunately. And then also, I find it to be, you know, strange that, you know, TikTok, like you said, they are doing whatever they can. But I feel like people who are uploading it even the first time, I believe you have to try to upload it multiple times for them to like ban you from the app. I'm sorry, if you are uploading that even initially, you have to go. Like, what's your purpose? How do you explain that?
A lot of times it could be someone just trying to clickbait people, get views, which is really unfortunate.
No.
Share something like that. They could be very young, unfortunately, kids. Yeah. I mean, you never know, but we should have people questioning their actions around these things and the platforms as well. Now, President Trump announced an expansion of a ban on offshore drilling and highlighted conservation projects in Florida. This comes, though, as his administration has overturned or weakened numerous regulations meant to protect air and water quality and lands essential for species impacted by these environmental decisions. Now, the ban on new offshore drilling sites covered those off the Florida coast, as well as Georgia and South Carolina. So that's some good news that I'm sure environmental activists are very happy about, but of course he can do much more. You gotta take your wins when they come. That was What's Trending this hour, and we're moving into top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. So what's the tea, Ryan?
Yes, we call that the tea report, and they're your pop culture moments that are trending right now. Now, let's start off with Selena Gomez, because I have actually, over my break, I have been watching a ton of her content. So she has a new HBO Max show called Selena and the Chef. We talked about it here. I'm obsessed with it. Well, she's doing a lot of press, and she just revealed in a new interview that her dating life has been put on a pause. Here's that clip.
Pandemic.
It's hard in quarantine. This is also not an invitation. No, it's just funny because I release things that, like, say I want a boyfriend and stuff, and people, like, say that, and I'm like, no, I didn't really mean it, though. Guys are a lot of work.
And when Nikki...
Which is interesting because I kind of agree with her where she's, like, saying, oh, every time I put out these moments and signs that I want a boyfriend, I then think about, like, oh, maybe not. And she also revealed that her current status with, you know, her past flames, claiming that all of her exes think she's crazy. But she also added that she doesn't care. And to be honest, don't all of our exes think
I mean, Selena Gomez is just like all of us, trying to cook food and, you know, someone who has exes who think they're crazy. So,
yeah, for sure.
It happens. I mean, we've all been there, Selena, so we get it.
Now, moving on from Selena Gomez, even though I love her and could talk about her for hours, Ellen DeGeneres, guess what? She is actually going to be addressing her backstage drama. Everything that we have been talking about, she's going to be addressing it when her show returns on September 21st. The announcement came out. Here's basically in a press release something that the statement said. I can't wait to get back to work and back to our studio. And yes, we're going to talk about it. That's what she said. And of course, you know, she was accused of creating a toxic work environment. And that announcement comes actually with the whole A-list guests that are going to be on her show. Tiffany Haddish, Kerry Washington, Alec Baldwin, Chrissy Teigen, Chris Rock. I mean, she has a star-studded like lineup actually ready to kick off this next season of her show, which is crazy.
It seems like she made it work for her. It seems like it's continuing. It did not matter.
That's your tea report of the pop culture moments that are trending right now.
All right, coming up, Dr. Anthony Fauci said we are entering a pandemic age, as I mentioned. We tell you what that actually means next in 8 minutes. The leading voice of the coronavirus task force, Dr. Anthony Fauci, believes we may be entering a pandemic era. And here to break down what that even means is Dr. Andy Dobson, professor of ecology and evolutionary biology at Princeton University. Thanks for being here today.
My pleasure. Great to see you.
Yes, great to see you. Now, let's get into this. What does a pandemic age mean?
Well, I think you would call a pandemic age an era when we're seeing more disease outbreaks than we're used to. Through human history, we've had disease outbreaks such as the 1918 influenza. Before that, we had disease outbreaks going back through history. They just were in a situation where they seem to be arriving faster and faster. Roughly, we get a new disease outbreak at the similar sort of rate at which the people in the US get a new president or the people in Europe get new presidents and prime ministers every 4 years or so.
Okay. And that's not normal because typically it was, what, every few decades?
Well, the rate at which they will appear will be some function of the size of the population. So as you have bigger and bigger populations spread into more and more of the globe, you expose more people to the things out there we haven't been exposed to before.
And so I think,
The Bible records there being many plagues, and those writings have some historical accuracy, and that they were representing people sitting down and forming the first cities. And that's a fabulous situation to allow the first diseases to establish in humans.
Oh my God. Hmm. I feel like you just told us about the apocalypse in some ways and how we should be preparing for it. But I think...
Well, it's not an apocalypse because we have people with the skill sets to do something about it.
Okay.
True. But my question is, and one thing that this article brought up was about climate change. How is that playing into this as well? Because if we're entering into this, it did basically bluntly say it joins humanity's very real race to doomsday, which feels intense.
Well, the two are related, but not entirely connected. And climate change is coming about because of all the burning of fossil fuels, which is both through industry, through people driving around, through people flying around, and very much through people destroying tropical forests. By destroying tropical forests, people going in there to do that increase the rate of exposure of those people doing that to pathogens that are lurking in the forest. and those people then bring them back and they infect other people. So the major routes in which we seem to get new diseases are one, from tropical deforestation, two, from the trade in species that people are using for foods, for furs, yeah, for various luxury items, and third, from the intensification of agriculture. And we tend to get the more novel ones from the deforestation and from the illegal wildlife trade.
All right. So basically, humans are to blame. I see that. Again, we're talking about the pandemic.
We've always been to blame for our own stupidity.
Again, with us right now is Dr. Andy Dobson, professor of ecology and evolutionary biology at Princeton University. Now, when we talk about us entering this pandemic age, is there a way to avoid this? Or at this point, is it just happening and we need to face it?
All of those things. I mean, what human stupidity brings us, human ingenuity can help protect us from. So the two simplest things would be to slow down the rates of tropical deforestation. And of course, that would massively deal with the other problem, which is climate change, because tropical forests are the best way to remove carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. There's a lot of emphasis on global warming, of slowing down, you know, moving to electric cars. All that's doing is slowing the amount of CO2, the carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases we put into the atmosphere. But we have to find some way of bringing it back out. And trees are the cheapest, oldest way to do that. So if you destroy forests, you're making the world warmer and you're exposing us to diseases.
Well, coming out of climate change, because obviously we're still in the middle of a pandemic. And one thing that I always ask is, do we have the bandwidth to worry about, one, the pandemic and climate change? Should we just be picking one and being like, this is the more important one? What does that look like when it comes to prioritizing?
I think initially we should all be very worried. But B, once we realize that the solution to them both is the same thing, then that halves the amount that you've got to worry. So it's quite good to say, okay, let's put a lot of efforts into pressurizing places like Brazil, Indonesia, other parts of Southeast Asia, Central Africa, to massively slow down the rates of tropical deforestation, because that'll slow the rate at which you get new diseases, and it'll reverse global climate change. So that's a win-win situation. And
yeah,
you simply have to find alternative jobs and opportunities for the people who live in those areas, and perhaps stop utilizing the products, which many of which go into the wildlife trade, all of which are harmful.
And this really requires a change in leadership, because or what does this require? Can an individual citizen make a difference at this point?
Sentience of leadership might be a better way to think of it. We need more leaders to realize that this is a really, really important problem, but both of those problems have a very similar solution, and international collaboration could get us there.
Okay. Well, when we have someone like Trump pulling out of the climate deal, right? And it's become so politicized, what are we supposed to do?
Well, it's really daft to make an existentialist threat politicized. What you want to do is actually get people unified together, both nationally and internationally, to work on solutions to that problem. And that shouldn't be something that's politicized. The solutions should be developed in a way that creates jobs, makes the world a better place, and reduces risks for children, who are the people who are going to suffer most from climate change and ultimately from things like COVID.
Well, thank you again for joining us today. That was Dr. Andy Dobson, professor of ecology and evolutionary biology at Princeton University. Now, coming up, you might have a hard time figuring out how to find the information you actually need about COVID-19. So we're going to tell you how to navigate what's actually important in 7 minutes. With COVID-19, a news story that may be 100% accurate can still unintentionally mislead you about the greatest threats of this pandemic. And joining us to explain how you can find the information you really need and what it will take to make us all trust everything that's out there is Brian Dunning, host of the Skeptoid podcast. Welcome back.
Hey, thank you for having me again, as always.
You know, this is important. I mean, it's not a new story, though, right? We talk about fake news. We talk about how there's a lot of stuff that's inaccurate out there. But let's talk about the fact that there is stuff that's accurate but misleading. What does that actually mean?
Yeah, I people tend to get their COVID-19 information, or really any information, from the sources they're sort of preconditioned to embrace.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, for better or for worse, we're in a period right now of extreme political division. So people tend to get their sources from, you know, a source that aligns with them politically, whether it's left or right, whether it's Fox News or CNN. That tends to be where people go. And so we're hoping to get people to get a little bit more reliable and less biased of an answer to that.
Well, I think what a lot of these media sources, and even what we're doing storytelling here on this show, is we are leading with personal stories, ones that could hit home, can remind you with, you know, remind you of maybe your possible family members, to kind of really say, this is dangerous, right? Do you think people have kind of just become used to that type of storytelling, and now they're just like, well, I don't know, I still don't believe it?
You know, that's actually quite dangerous, because the whole personal anecdote version of telling a story is the kind of thing that we're preconditioned to embrace. When we hear that, when we hear something, a story that tugs on your heartstrings, for example, right? We go, oh my gosh, that's so terrible. I'm gonna believe whatever this story wants me to believe. And that might be good information. It might be terrible information. You have no way of knowing. So, I mean, you really got to stray away from the personal anecdotes, the personal stories, as compelling as they might be. It's not the way to get totally unbiased, pure, you know, objective information.
But Brian, is it about staying away from it or just having the knowledge that this doesn't represent the whole story and it's going to be a different type of storytelling, right? So you're going to go to your outlets to get these like facts and data information, and then you might go to other places that the storytelling will just be more interesting for you to enjoy.
Hey, I love going to stories, going and getting stories that I enjoy as much as anyone, right? But I mean, I'm a science writer. I've been a science writer for 14 years now. This is, I know that those places are not where you're going to find the totally objective, unbiased science information. So hopefully I want to get people to be able to enjoy both. Find the information, find the stories that, you know, make it, that humanize the whole issue, but also get good, reliable information to protect you and your family.
Yeah. Again, we're talking to Brian Dunning, host of the Skeptoid podcast, about where you can get your information. And when we talk about this, like, I want to talk about news outlets, because in the story that you were featured on about this topic, we even talked about, or they talked about NPR, which is a very trusted source, right? But yeah, of course, they, like anyone, want to tell the story in an interesting way. So they'll use like a heart-wrenching right, personal anecdote, right?
Yep.
And that brings you in, but that doesn't mean it represents what everyone is going through.
Yeah. The human interest angle is a tool that sort of every news outlet uses to bring in listeners. This is fascinating. This morning, a couple hours ago, I posted a Twitter poll saying, which of these sources would you trust the most right now for COVID-19 information? Now, Twitter only allows four answers, so I put four right up there. The CDC, the World Health Organization, a presidential candidate, and major news media. Now, to everyone's credit, nobody answered a presidential candidate. That's a terrible source to get information.
Good to know.
Major news media, I was surprised, only 2% suggested that.
Wow.
And then 2/3 said the World Health Organization, which is international, and then 1/3 said the CDC, which is U.S. only.
Well, what's so frustrating, though, is we are 6 months into this and people are still saying they don't believe the facts. I mean, it's clear cut. And you're even saying that maybe you shouldn't lead with kind of this biased, personal, heart-wrenching story and just lead with facts. But yeah, even then, people don't believe it. So what do we do?
The first thing you have to do is you have to acknowledge that ourselves, we, us, me, you, and I, we have biases. We accept information we're conditioned to believe, and we reject information we're not conditioned to believe that doesn't agree with our tribe, quote unquote, right? If you can acknowledge that, if you can acknowledge, I'm wrong, I prefer information that I like, and I reject information I don't like, then you can go out and find the totally objective, unbiased information and be more receptive to it.
And what are we supposed to do when places like the World Health Organization, the U.S. is pulling out of funding that? It creates more of a lack of trust in those places.
You know, it does. And that's very unfortunate. And it's not helping anything. A month ago, 6 months ago, I would have said, go to the CDC for the best information. Now I'm kind of, go to the World Health Organization, because the CDC, in this extremely divisive political year, has started to become politicized. And so you got to maybe set that aside a little bit and go to the World Health Organization, which is totally uninvolved in the U.S. presidential election. And you know, that, like the 2/3 of people who answered positively on my poll, that's probably where I'd go to get the best information today.
All right. Or the Skeptoid podcast, of course.
Or the Skeptoid podcast at skeptoid.com.
Wow, that's the voice you want to hear. Brian Dunning, thanks as always. We appreciate it. And now coming up, a Trump boat parade is causing waves, literally. More info on that next. We've got more news you might have missed over this long weekend while you were enjoying yourself and the country continued to dive into madness.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we were trying to enjoy ourselves, but of course, we got to pay attention to stuff.
Right? We try to do our job, even when we're not here recording the show. All right. Well, President Trump opened a Bible, and of course, that's not surprising necessarily, but he signed his name in it. And now it could be worth nearly $40,000, Ryan.
I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. And I'm so sad that he is taking this moment that is completely disrespectful to those peaceful protesters and profiting off of this. This is wild.
Well, like, let's reference that. Of course, we remember he had this infamous photo op with the Bible in Washington, D.C., in this spot where he had pushed aside, and that's saying that very nicely, protesters who were there peacefully.
Girl, he tear gassed them. They got tear gassed so his ass could walk out in the middle of the street and pose like he was Naomi Campbell with the Bible in front of a church.
So the thing is, and you know, I'm Jewish, so we have our Siddur.
Your Seder?
No, there's a Seder and then there's Siddur.
Ah, okay.
Which, that's the Hebrew way of saying it. I believe, is there
another...
Are
you fact-checking yourself,
yes.
Miss Jewish?
Yeah, it's a Jewish prayer book. Anyway, I was like, is there another thing to... Okay, I'm like, I feel bad. I'm sorry to all the Jews out there. The Torah. Okay, there's a Siddur and the Torah. I'm learning about myself as we speak.
Love it.
Okay, but is it wrong to sign a Bible? I've never seen anyone do this.
You know, that's the interesting thing, right? It's so funny because a lot of his supporters, they claim themselves to be very religious human beings. They claim themselves to be Christian. And he bases his own campaign off of Christianity. But when you think about it, Trump really tries to mimic being a god, being a dictator. And it's really crazy that he's signing his name in the Bible like he's this higher level figure, and that just feels blasphemous. I mean, I grew up in the church. I feel like I'm more spiritual than religious, but this just feels wrong in all types of ways. But his supporters won't see it that way.
Because they think that like God signed it, like now he's associated.
No, but they think he's like God. They think he's he's a man of God, and they think
he's a religious leader of sorts.
Been ordained to be in the White House to be there. And it's just, it's weird. It's very cultish and it's weird.
Well, if you're wondering where you can get this 40K book, if that's what you want to get, and if you have the money to spend on that, hey, the autographed Bible is going up for sale through the memorabilia company Moments in Time. I feel like that sounds like a soap opera. And they're saying that again, that you can get this slice of Trump history for a cool $37,500.
I mean, if you have that money to spend, I can literally give you a list of things that I really need help for. Me and Shira both need help on.
Yeah, hey, thank you.
We can make sure that money is used in a very wonderful way.
I appreciate you for including me, Ryan. Thank you.
Yeah, I almost didn't because I thought about it and I was like, you know what? Shira's sitting right here in front of me. Why not?
Okay. Well, another crazy thing that happened over the weekend, there was a pro-Trump parade in Texas and it caused 5 boats to sink.
It's not funny. Luckily, everyone was safe that yes. were on these boats. But I have to say, those boats sinking is really how I would describe 2020, right? 2020 is like a big sinking boat. And it was hilarious to see all that happening. But I'm happy people are safe. Let's say that.
Exactly. All right, moving on. A religious leader tested positive for COVID-19 after blaming gay marriage for the pandemic. What is going on? That's next in What's Trending This Hour. It's that time again. What's Trending This Hour? Before we get into that, a reminder of what's coming up. Mm-hmm. We're going to be getting into why being cutthroat isn't a good thing, and also why being overconfident can actually lead to disaster in the workplace.
Both things that
me and you need help with, Ryan.
First of all, I'm not overly confident. I'm just confident. Thank you.
Okay.
I know how to ask.
You're overconfident about your confidence.
Yes, overconfident about the lack of confidence.
Oh my God.
No, but I love this conversation. I can't wait for you all to hear it, because who knew? And also the fake it till you make it, where does that fall into
it's real so yeah saying. Okay, but now let's get into some What's Trending This Hour. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says the GOP's skinny COVID-19 bill is inadequate and laden with poison pills that Democrats won't support.
Senate Republicans appear dead set on another bill which doesn't come close to addressing the problems in our country. Republicans are going to cut their original inadequate $1 trillion skinny bill in half, maybe more, and put it up for a vote this week. Of course, it had no input, zero input from Democrats.
So I guess it's still going to be a bit of time before we get that stimulus check.
I mean, it's so annoying, to be honest. Like, I want Democrats to get everything that they're asking for in terms of, like, hey, yes, it's important to think about this stuff, because a lot of the stuff that they're thinking about, Republicans, unfortunately, are not thinking about. And I just want both parties to understand there are people who are losing their livelihoods. They cannot afford to even stay in their apartments anymore. There's no eviction moratoriums. There's really nothing right now helping the American people. And so many people have been affected by COVID-19. Why are we not moving quicker than what we're seeing? And it's unfortunate. And I hope they come up with a decision soon, quick in the hurry. Because, honey, wouldn't I love that extra $1,200 if it is that, you know?
I hear you. And now that they're back from their recess, hopefully there'll be something very soon.
Always now, taking a damn recess. They like kids.
Have a recess.
I'm just like, they can't stay off the damn playground.
Now, talking robots that interact with older people could be introduced into care homes to help fight loneliness and mental ill health. That is interesting. I love this, actually. This is tech used in the right way, okay? For the right thing. Pepper, this is where it could get problematic, right? Pepper's a culturally competent robot. I don't know. There could be some biases there.
Okay.
And they were tested on care home residents in Britain and Japan. Those who interacted with it for up to 18 hours over the course of 2 weeks saw a significant improvement in their mental health. That comes from researchers. Pepper was part of a large global study known as Caresses. And they investigated the use of AI in caring for the elderly. The scientists behind the study also found that after 2 weeks of using the system, there was a small but positive impact on loneliness severity among users.
I've watched too many sci-fi movies and television shows to know that I just do not like robots or AI systems. So I don't know about Miss Pepper, but...
Or it could be a Mr. or they. We don't know. It doesn't have a gender.
Well, Pepper reminds me of Blue's Clues, and she was a woman, I believe. So
Would you trust a robot with your grandmother, with your grandparents? Like,
no. Did nobody watch iRobot? There was literally a scene where when all the robots flipped, there was one with an elderly woman, and she almost died. Actually, did she die? I don't remember. Let us know at LGT Show.
I'll have to go back. Now, a Ukrainian religious leader who blamed gay marriage for the spread of coronavirus has tested positive for COVID-19. This guy is 91 years old, by the way. Patriarch Filaret, who heads one of Ukraine's largest Orthodox congregations, is in hospital and in stable condition after being diagnosed with the disease following routine testing. He also has developed pneumonia, and he is one of Ukraine's most prominent religious leaders and claims to have 15 million followers among its 42 million people. That's a lot of followers.
Yeah, but that is.
He said very problematic and hurtful statements. So that's an update there. All right, let's move to some pop culture news. What's going on, Ryan?
Well, of course, you know, this is what we call the Tea Report, those pop culture moments that are trending right now. You know, I was going to start with Miley Cyrus, but I just found a story about Joe Exotic. You remember him? That feels like forever ago.
What do you mean, remember him? It was just like, it just happened.
Yeah, it was at the top of this. I don't even know when it really was.
It was at the top of quarantine.
Oh my God. That feels like years ago. But
it
anyway,
does feel like forever.
He is coming out to say that he was sexually assaulted by prison guards. And that's just one of the reasons why President Trump should pardon him. So basically, he is serving a 22-year-old sentence after hiring a hitman to kill a Big Cat rival. Yeah. If you saw Tiger King, that thing, you understand. But he's now coming out saying, I have been sexually assaulted by jail staff, beat up, and tied in a chair to the point skin came off my arms. And he's like now pleading to Trump to pardon him. And I thought this was so interesting because obviously prison sources insisted to TMZ that there was no such assault. But now he's freaking out and saying that this is what's happening to him. Oh my God, are you kidding me?
Who do we believe?
I don't even know. To be honest, I don't. In all honesty, I have a hard time believing white folks, but that's just me. Now, moving on. let's talk Miley Cyrus, because she appeared on the Joe Rogan Experience last week, and obviously she's doing a lot of press for her new song, which I love. And here's a moment where she's discussing Drag Race, and basically she threw some amazing shade at Joe Rogan. I'm just going to play the clip. Here you go.
Kennedy.
You know who Kennedy is?
I know every single one of them.
They all do the same move. They drop down and do the splits.
That's what I think when I'm watching your shows too. You know, all the same stuff.
But
I mean,
obsessed.
This is good. This is a great moment that we all didn't even know that we needed.
I mean, honestly, and that is your tea report. And those are your pop culture moments trending right now.
All right. Well, coming up next, does being cutthroat at work actually get you ahead? Find out next in 8 minutes. A lot of people say that in order to succeed, it requires a cutthroat mentality. But does being cutthroat at work actually get you ahead? And here to dispel that rumor is Cameron Anderson, professor at the Haas School of Business at UC Berkeley. He's also an expert on topics relating to power, leadership, conflict resolution, and so much more. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I find this topic very fascinating and important to talk about. You know, there's a recent study that revealed different personalities and their long-term success in the workplace. What were some of the discoveries?
So the biggest discovery was that being cutthroat and selfish and bullying and overall kind of nasty just didn't give anyone an advantage in gaining power. It didn't hurt their power, but it didn't help them either.
And so what's interesting about this is obviously being cutthroat and all those things that you just listed, that's just not something that seems appealing. But I do wonder, shouldn't you have a little bit of that inside you once you're kind of embarking in your career and you kind of do want to have this moment where you don't want people to take advantage of you? Is there a balance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there were certain elements that came out of the data, and we've seen this in previous studies, where if you are overly altruistic, where you're giving until it hurts, where your job performance starts to suffer, then yeah, in the long run, you won't do as well as other people. But aside from that kind of extreme version of agreeableness, no, I mean, you really, being nice is just fine. There's no harm in being nice and generous to others.
I love that.
So if this is all the case, then where did the idea of being cutthroat come from? Because it seems like something that, while we know this, like nice and altruism, that helps, there's still this mentality that you need to be cutthroat to get ahead.
That's a great question. That's actually something I want to look at now, because there is this widespread myth that if you're too nice, you're going to finish last. There's a couple of possibilities. I mean, one is that we pay very close attention to very powerful people, like in politics or in business, where they are massive jerks and they are incredibly successful. And I think those examples might lead us to think that that's why they got there, because they were a jerk. That's how they rose to the top. Whereas we don't pay as much attention to examples of people who, you know, are very nice or, you know, moderate on agreeableness, and they're also powerful. Those examples just kind of blend into the background. But it's the really powerful jerks that really jump out in our attention and that we focus on. That's my hunch.
Yeah, they're problematic, it seems, probably. Again, we're talking to Cameron Anderson, professor at the Haas School of Business at UC Berkeley, about cutthroat mentality in the workplace.
You know, and one thing about this is, obviously, it says people who were better team players did better at work across race and gender. But I do wonder, how can people's existing biases or even jealousies play into this idea of labeling someone to be cutthroat?
Well, let me make sure I understand the question. So, is the idea that the effect might differ for different people?
Well, I'm interested in this because I think what I've seen, especially as a person of color, a Black person in certain industries, if you are a Black woman, you can be labeled a B word just for being kind of ambitious or saying,
a woman,
hey,
the C word. How many people? Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. So I do wonder, how much does that play into it? If you are someone or you have someone on your team, they're coming to the situation being like, I don't want to take orders for them, so they're automatically this to me.
That's right. So yeah, this leads to something we kind of expected to find, which was a backlash effect for disagreeable women and disagreeable people of color. I mean, we didn't formally hypothesize it, but just there's a huge literature on backlash effects where women and people of color, if they are assertive and strong, they face this backlash and they're liked less than white men who show the same behavior. And so we thought that we would see elements of that in our data, but we didn't at all. It didn't depend on gender, ethnicity. I think there's a difference here. In the studies that show backlash effects, it's all about assertiveness and being strong. And here, we're really focused on people being nasty, like people being selfish and manipulative and bullying.
Yeah.
And I think once you start talking about those darker behaviors, it doesn't matter who you are, they just don't pay off. I think that's the difference.
Do you think we're going to see a future where our approach to this changes, like and the new generation is going to approach the workplace differently?
I hope so. And I do think so. I have faith. I mean, I'm basing this just on watching my kids go through school and how much training they're getting on things like emotional intelligence and social sensitivity.
Oh, wow.
And well, teamwork.
Your kids must be going to a good school.
Well, I'm hearing more and more that it's becoming commonplace for those types of topics to be taught in grade school, in middle school, and high school. And so I think the more that these kids grow up in an environment where they understand the importance of collaboration and teamwork, then traits like agreeableness will be more valued and more rewarded. That's my hope.
So I guess for the person who's listening to this and who may have been cutthroat in the past, how do they change that behavior? Because I would assume it would be tough for people to trust that person again.
Great question. So the first thing that they could do is to dispel the myth in their own head that being cutthroat is necessary. And the reason why I say that is that for many people, I would even say most people who behave in this way, they do so because they think they have to. They're acting in self-defense. They think that the world is a dog-eat-dog environment, and if they don't behave in these ways, they're going to get taken advantage of. So the first step is kind of dispelling that myth. The second would be to, as much as humanly possible, give them kind of, you know, a collective-minded set of goals. So in other words, convincing them that behaving in this way is going to harm the group and it's going to harm them in the end. And so if they can transform the way they interact with people, it's good for everybody, including them.
All right. Well, you are not leaving right now. You're sticking around with us, Cameron. And because we're all getting back to work after a long week and we thought this would be a good topic to continue talking about, we're going to be getting into why you don't want to be overconfident in the workplace and how to resist the temptation. That's next. Confidence. It's a word that you hear that often describes leaders in the workplace, but could too much of it actually lead to bad results? And how do you find that balance? Back with us is Cameron Anderson, professor at the Howe School of Business at UC Berkeley, who's also an expert on topics around power, status, influence, leadership, and all that fun stuff. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So how do you define overconfidence?
So it's very basic. We assess people's actual abilities, and if they think that they are better than they are, then they are overconfident. So for example, if you actually perform in the 50th percentile, but you think you're in the 90th percentile, you're overconfident.
Okay. And how is that problematic? How is that problematic? Couldn't that be good? Maybe ignorance is bliss?
It can be. So it's good and bad. This is a much more complicated story where, you know, if you're overconfident in your abilities and you take on too much, or you take on a role that is way above your abilities, then you're in trouble. And so decision making can really fall apart if you're overconfident. And there's a huge literature showing that. But it's not all bad news. We've done a ton of work showing that when you're overconfident, it's really hard for people to know whether you're full of it or not. And so they kind of buy into your confidence, even though it's unjustified. And they afford you status and they listen to you more and they give you more credibility. So it's sort of like, socially speaking, overconfidence gives you benefits, even if in the decision-making realm, it's more costly.
You know, the one thing that I think about when we're talking about this overconfidence is like, where do you think the fake it till you make it saying fits into being overly confident?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. We started doing work on that exact idea a couple of years ago, where we were asking people to fake it. We basically said, look, you're not very good at this task, but just pretend as though you are. Try to convince other people that you are. They were able to do it very effectively.
Wow.
I mean, even though they were terrible at the task, when they were interacting with other people and collaborating with them on it, they were still convincing other people very successfully that they were good. So you can imagine how over time, the more you're doing this, the more you're getting positive feedback, that can start to sink in and make you actually overconfident over time.
Again, we're talking to Cameron Anderson, professor of the Haas School of Business at UC Berkeley, about overconfidence. And at what point then does overconfidence lead to results?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of results, I would again argue that there's good and bad. Let's start with the bad. On the bad side, again, if you're taking on too much and if you're trying things that you really just don't have the ability to do, then the results will be bad. But there is research suggesting that if you can build confidence on a certain task or dimension or area in life, and that enables you to work harder at it and practice more, then your performance can go up. In other words, you can develop talent over time because of this confidence that you had in the beginning. So there's some good, there's some bad.
Well, I think what's interesting is this idea of when we're talking about privilege and how it really plays into this, right? Especially when it comes in terms to people of color, because the only thing I can really think about is the amount of people who, especially in systems and corporations where it's the cishet white man or white person who is faking it till they're making it and they're striving and they have, they're like moving up versus the
failing
people.
Forward.
The failing forward. Forward, yes, versus the people who are qualified. So how, you know, problematic really is this, and is it realistic that this system of people doing this can really continue to move forward?
Right. Great question. So we looked at whether there are gender or ethnicity differences in those effects of overconfidence that we talked about, like failing forward, and we didn't find any.
Did you talk to really good people or something?
You talked to Silicon Valley. Wait, Cameron, did you talk to all of Silicon Valley?
I mean, right. So it's a fair point. I mean, these are all college students, typically at good colleges, and so they might not be fully representative of the broader population. So that's true.
Right.
But even looking at other studies that are probably casting a wider net in terms of people in the country, they don't see many effects on gender ethnicity either. Now, that being said, that doesn't mean that gender ethnicity don't matter, right? I mean, the stereotypes about competence with respect to gender and ethnicity are still there. And so people might be starting at different baselines when they interact with others, if that makes sense, right? White men are going to be given the benefit of the doubt much more than women.
I mean, it's literally the reason why we have President Trump in the White House right now.
That's right. That's right. And to be honest, I mean, we've done a ton of research that then came to fruition in watching him win the election. I mean, he sort of was using all of these different behaviors that we had found in our studies to be highly effective, including overconfidence. I mean, by projecting this image of being able to do it all and using phrases like, I'm the only one who can fix the economy, they work because people bought into it.
So how can people find the balance between having confidence, because we all deserve that, right? Mm-hmm. Knowing we're worthy and valuable, and not becoming narcissistic and problematic.
That's a great question. So a close colleague of mine here at Haas named Don Moore just wrote a terrific book called Perfectly Confident that deals with exactly that question. And in the book, he really emphasizes how, you know, you want to take an honest look at yourself. Most people in most settings are at least slightly overconfident in their abilities. And if you want to be perfectly confident, you need to take an honest look at yourself. And that can sometimes mean getting objective feedback from others. So asking trusted sources, maybe not your spouse because they can have rose-colored glasses on, but colleagues that'll give it to you straight. Or watching yourself on video, give a presentation, or listening to yourself on audio during a meeting. I mean, these are the kinds of objective sources that can give you a more realistic take on who you are and how good you are.
All right. Well, a lot to think about as we get back into work. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course. My pleasure.
That was Cameron Anderson, professor at the Haas School of Business at UC Berkeley. Now coming up, want to change from your everyday life? Don't we all feel that these days? Find out how one candy maker is doing his own Willy Wonka style giveaway and how you can snag your gold ticket. That's next on our Yaz Queen of the Day. We're back and we're getting into our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen. You know, it has to be really elaborate since they haven't heard it in about a week. So,
okay, feeling it. Well, you know, for all those Willy Wonka fans out there, if you've ever wondered if it's possible to actually do a real life Willy Wonka type of adventure, well, the Jelly Belly founder is launching something that might make your dreams come true. The founder, who's out of Fairfield, California, is launching a series of golden ticket treasure hunts across the country before his retirement. So they're saying it's like Willy Wonka with a twist. So David Klein announced the contest in a video message online saying the big winner will walk away with the key to their very own candy factory. Thousands of dollars in prizes are also up for grabs.
I honestly do not understand this. you know, there's a viral tweet. It's so funny. These stories always kind of align with what you see on the internet. And there's a viral tweet that said, for the original Willy Wonka, out of all of that international kind of contest that he put on. Only white kids were the only ones that could have got a golden ticket. Like, how in the hell does that happen? But let's be honest here. We did play a little bit of a clip.
It's going to be a treasure hunt across the whole entire country where we're going to be hiding these right here. We've already hidden quite a few of them. We're going to be hiding them in every state across the country.
The guy, aesthetically, looks a little creepy. Him and his partner look a little creepy. And I don't know if that is what they were going for, but this does seem fun in the midst of everything happening right now.
Of course.
This is a very fun and interesting,
about.
Lighthearted thing. Still creepy.
By the way, though, it was interesting, to say the least. So Klein actually doesn't own Jelly Belly anymore, which I don't know how this is legal then for him to do this, but he's giving away one of his Candyman kitchens in Florida. I don't know, Candyman. Isn't there like a horror movie called Candyman?
Also, I hate jelly beans, but this is supposed
I like Jelly Belly.
I don't like jelly beans at all, or Jelly Belly or anything. I don't know. But I do think this is really fun. So is there a way that people can participate?
Yes. I was about to say, so the contest is not free. If you want to participate, you're going to need to pay $50 to receive their state's riddle, because this happens all around the country. There's also a gold ticket Facebook group. So you could find out more at facebook.com/group/thegoldticket.
See, that's different from the Willy Wonka, because the Willy Wonka, he had all the money. So he just sent out these gold tickets and it was nothing for him. So you got to put a little something, something in to win a little something. So
maybe they need some more money.
Maybe we should do it. Maybe we should put together 25, 25, and we try to win and do the
rest. We would have to go around the country to get the little gold things.
Well, our show is called Let's Go There. So
let's do it.
Let's actually go.
Where's our car sponsor? Okay. Well, that does it for our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen.
And coming up tomorrow, we're here back, actually. We're not going away anytime soon. They said no more vacation for us. 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Channel Q weekdays. The dictionary is getting a huge update. We'll tell you the words that are changing and what you can find. And the Senate is back from recess, so will we see another stimulus check soon?
Oh, I hope so, because, honey, it is needed.
Yep, that is tomorrow. And of course, if you miss any of our shows, we post everything as a podcast. Just go to the radio.com app, search Let's Go There, and subscribe so you're notified when we post new episodes. Sending you love and light.
And honey, remember to slay. Oh my God, I'm so happy we're back, Sheer.
Yeah, see you tomorrow. Have a great night. Bye.
All right, bye.